All right, really quickly, the National Weather Service in the Twin Cities has issued a tornado warning for, get here, southwestern Carver County in east central Minnesota until 7:15. All right, we'll take a look at the rest of the weather here in just a little bit, but joining us now on the John Schuster Coal Banker Hotline is an individual that it's just an amazing person. He's a really good human being. You guys know the name Madera Arredondo, former Minneapolis Police Department Chief of Police. And you know about him being the man in the job when everything occurred with George Floyd just a few years ago. But I know him as a citizen of our fine city and state that has been a spectacular law enforcement official for many, many years. And he joins us here on the Lake Show this evening because I have questions for him just from the tragic events that occurred over the weekend. First off, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Obviously, our hearts are heavy here in Minnesota over the tragic killings, obviously, of our Minnesota State Representative Melissa Hortman and her husband, obviously the shootings of our State Senator John Hoppin and his wife. But I know that Minnesotans always are. We come together. We're a resilient group of people here, and we'll certainly learn from this. But obviously there's a lot of moving pieces right now as this is still the investigation in terms of the prosecution is underway at this point.
Yeah. I want to start with this. And it's the to me, because I admire law enforcement and the hard work that you guys do, the dynamics of trying to pull together all the resources in the midst of chaos in a tragic situation. So what I'm meaning is that, like, when you're hearing about this late Friday, early Saturday, and you know that you have a suspect and a fugitive that's out there that is, you know, assassinated people and has shot others, like, what is that communication like in terms of the, because it's a chaotic situation, you're trying to find somebody that is up to no good. What is it like between one city or one police department to another police department to maybe federal officials?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I can tell you from personal experience, you know, one of the advantages that our public safety personnel have in Minnesota is they train constantly together. They cross train. So our local departments working along with our sheriff's offices, our county resources, and our state resources, including our federal partners, they're constantly working together. When this tragedy occurred Saturday, and I was notified about it, knowing that Department of Public Safety Commissioner Bob Jacobson, and for those who don't know in Minnesota, tremendous leader, great person with great integrity, knows the business, along with BCA, our Bureau of Criminal Apprehension Superintendent Drew Evans. They do this work, and they do it exceptionally in terms of leading and, as you mentioned, pulling all of these pieces together. It's a very complex situation when you bring in all of these resources, but I will tell you that I was confident that having, obviously, Commissioner Jacobson at the helm and then Superintendent Drew Evans kind of leading all of these organizations, all of these different agencies, I knew we were in a good place in terms of that. Superintendent Evans has personally helped me in some of the BCA investigations involving some of the most high-profile critical incidents the city of Minneapolis has ever had. So I can attest to they're good. And as Commissioner Jacobson said from the podium that Saturday, that they're about seeking justice, and I knew they were going to ultimately bring into custody the suspect, Vance Belter.
You know, I met Mr. Jacobson a year ago, and I echoed your sentiments. We had a really good conversation. I actually, Saturday, I was at the Lynx game, but my head wasn't into the Lynx game because I was still thinking about what was occurring in real time, and I ended up having a quick conversation with the former Commissioner of Public Safety, John Harrington, who happened to be at the game as well. And so we just kind of, you know, chatted real briefly. When we have a situation like this, because the one thing that you guys do in law enforcement across the board is you reference it. You train so much. Like, you're always prepping and getting prepared But it's one thing to prepare, but also, you know, when things actually happen in real time. When it's chaotic as it is, what is kind of the thing that kind of holds you all together in terms of being able to make things work and being able to have that swift and good communication?
Yeah, I think the first thing, it's leadership. I think it's respected leadership. The people, whether they're certainly Air Commissioner Jacobson or Superintendent Drew Evans, and even the individual local leaders, Chief Brulee of Brooklyn Park PD, and I'll just say it again, his officers did had they not had the wherewithal and the intuition to respond to Representative Hortman's home that evening, and kudos to Sergeant Norden out there who directed two of his officers to respond, who they engaged the suspect. Had they not done that, we might not even be having this conversation right now tonight, because the manhunt would still be ongoing. So it's like relying upon leadership. It's also the expertise. Many of these folks in our Minnesota State Public Safety, they do these things. They have a lane that they do well, whether that's intelligence gathering, whether that's investigations, whether that's tactical teams, whether that's just the senior patrol officers who know their communities. They do a phenomenal job. So it's leadership, and it's relying upon those subject matter experts out there in the field. So Minnesota Public Safety does it really well.
Talking to former Minneapolis Police Department Chief Madeira Arredondo here on the Lake Show, News Talk 830 WCCO. I'd be remiss to not ask you the question about Melissa Hortman. Had you had the privilege of meeting her or assisting her or working with her throughout the years?
Yes, I had met her a couple of times, public safety related items that came up at the state legislature. But I will tell you that every law enforcement official that really interacted with her quite a bit just had nothing but high praise for her.
Man, it's really hard to think that what occurred here in our city, in our state, occurred. And there's a part of me that still feels like I want to wake up from a bad dream. You know what I'm saying? Because it just,
yes.
You know,
yes.
we're just kind of the toxic hate that we have right now in this country in 2025. It really does. It diminishes my faith in humanity, if that makes sense.
It does. I will say that, you know, we need good people with good character to help us in these leadership positions. And we certainly need them to represent our best interests in the political universe. And so we have to make sure that all of us, community members, those running for office, we have to make sure that we remember that our words do matter. And you know, that's the great thing about the country here. We can agree to disagree, and we should obviously keep the tone down. And because we're going to need people to step up into these spaces when perhaps me or you may not want to, we need to support them, but we need to make sure that we can have civil discourse where it's okay to disagree, but it should never result in violence, ever.
Yes, I agree with you 100%. I do want to get to, and this is a very important question I want to ask you about, because it's a feeling that we all have as civilians. There are a lot of people that I talked to this weekend that had a fear that they'd never had before. And it's the fear of knowing that there are people out there that will pose as law enforcement that are evildoers. How do we calm the fears of those that are out there having that sense of, oh my gosh, I can't believe what happened to Melissa Hortman and her husband and Senator Hoffman? I would never want that to happen to my family. Because, look, unfortunately, in the world, there are a lot of people that are up to no good and will try to take advantage of situations. But to think that that occurred, I think that there are a lot of people that are kind of right now, they're in this, I guess, feeling that, you know, I'm scared to kind of open up my door if police come to my door.
Yeah, well, the thing, and I can understand, and that's a valid understanding, or valid feeling that folks may have. We have over 18,000 police agencies in the United States. we are the men and women out there are getting it right more often than not, each and every single day. If you look at even the situation, now this is a very unique situation. I don't recall in my years of service ever some sort of impersonation of a police officer that went to the deadliness that this did, and certainly to the planning that this had. But even after, immediately after it occurred, you saw one of the protocols was given out in Brooklyn Park and certainly Champlin, was that they worked with their police officers and their dispatchers, letting the community know, we are going to show up in two pairs. If you see one officer come into your door, don't open that door. So there's this level of communication, as Commissioner Jacobson said, how dare this suspect try to taint the uniform and the profession in doing that. It was a heinous, evil act. But we get it right more often than not. And so these acts certainly can lead to erosion of some of the trust. But we just, the men and women who wear that badge, wear that uniform, they're going to continue to be out there daily, nightly, building those relationships with their communities. So while people can certainly feel that way, this doesn't happen ever. Certainly it's rare that it happens. And so, but there'll be protocols, there'll be lessons learned from this, and folks are going to work together to make sure that we're keeping certainly our elected officials safe. Moving into the future, but also continuing to build that trust. You know, we get it right more times than not. And so we just have to keep pushing forward.
A final question for you, and I appreciate your time this evening. You kind of just touched on what I was going to get to next, is do you think that what occurred over the weekend, do you think that that is going to increase possibly the level of heightened security revolving around lawmakers?
I would certainly say this year, our U.S. Capitol Police continue to monitor any sort of threats related to our elected officials. We certainly have our Capitol security teams here at the Minnesota State, and also local law enforcement agencies that, knowing they have elected officials living within their cities or towns, they're certainly going to be paying them much more attention. And working with them to have security plans. That's, you know, unfortunately, you mentioned at the top of your remarks, this is sadly, in some respects, the society we live in today. But all of those parts working together are going to do their best to make sure that we mitigate and prevent these types of acts occurring in the future.
So I appreciate you coming on the show. And you know this, I got a lot of respect for you. You're not just a former, you know, Minneapolis Police Department chief. You're a community builder with a lot of integrity. So
Thank
I appreciate you.
You
coming on the Late Show.
Much appreciated. Thank you so much. Thank
right.
you for your listeners as well.
All right.
Thank
Take
you.
Care. Yep. That's former Minneapolis Police Department Chief Madeira Arredondo joining us here on The Late Show. 651-461-9226. That's the text line. We are going to get to Bite of the Night, and we'll do that next on the show. All right. Quickly before the Bite of the Night, tornado warning for northeastern Blue Earth County in south central Minnesota. Also for southwestern Le Sueur County in south central Minnesota, and also southeastern Nicollet County in south central Minnesota. That until 7:45. 7:45 locations impacted include Mankato, North Mankato, St. Peter, Eagle Lake, and Madison Lake. So those will be the areas that are most impacted, I will repeat, include Mankato, North Mankato, St. Peter, Eagle Lake, and Madison Lake. So we're going to be paying attention to weather all night long, because the weather is coming and going, Chris. It's raining 1 second, and it's moving on to another area the next minute.
Yeah, and you know, this is such an emotional night that there's so many feelings that are still raw. And for you to be able to just tell the story to the listeners, and I think this is one of those nights where the Lake Show needs to be more Henry Lake and more Henry Lake's reaction to everything that happened. And kind of like we're talking about things behind the scenes, I'm over here keeping an eye on the weather with everything, because I don't want that to go under the radar.
Yeah, we got to keep an eye on the weather.
I feel like tonight is one of those nights that this is your show
Well, that's every night.
The list, yeah, that's true. Wow. As my kid would say, wow. No, but it's...
reality check.
Yeah, that's a pew, pop the ego.
Anyway,
there.
I get the point, yeah.
Yeah, but I'll keep an eye on the weather. You just keep doing what you're doing.
All right, so let's get to Bite of the Night here quickly. And then we are going to talk to Aaron Rupar, public notice newsletter. He's going to join us next segment. So we're going to stay with politics. And then even 8 o'clock, we're supposed to be talking to Jeff Hayden. I'm not sure if he's going to make it in studio because of the weather, but we'll see how things play out. But a couple of sound bites to get to for Bite of the Night. We got two bites of the night tonight. The first is from Sham Sharania from ESPN. He's the NBA insider.
Okay? He's the new Woj.
This is like this is probably like the only sports thing of the evening. He was told, because everybody's talking about where's Kevin Durant going to land? Where's Kevin Durant going to land? Where is he going to go? Oh, is he going to Houston? Is he going to San Antonio? Is he going to go to the Minnesota Timberwolves? You know Anthony Edwards is his favorite player. Well, this is the report that he had just a few hours ago earlier.
I'm told the Phoenix Suns remain in active conversations around the league on a Kevin Durant deal, but their focus over the last several days has been on three teams, and that's the Miami Heat, Houston Rockets, and Minnesota Timberwolves. We know his preferred destinations, though, are the Rockets, Spurs, and the Heat. And so the Suns have been working with Durant's business partner, Rich Kleiman, on just figuring out exactly where he could end up. Could it be one of his three preferred destinations? Could it be a wild card team? Because, listen, at the end of the day, his expiring contract of $54.7 million is going to play a part in this. And I'm told Durant has no desire to be in Minnesota with the Timberwolves. So how does that shape how the Minnesota Timberwolves and other teams that could have interest that are outside his preferred list decide how to move forward with these Durant discussions?
I like Kevin Durant. I don't want Kevin Durant. And this is the reason why I don't want Kevin Durant. In order to get Kevin Durant, I just don't see any way that you could make something work with the Phoenix Suns that doesn't involve Jaden McDaniels. I am not moving Jaden McDaniels. To me, there are two untouchables on this team. Those two untouchables are Anthony Edwards and Jaden McDaniels. That's it. Everybody else is movable. And that includes Rudy. No disrespect to Rudy Gobert, but he can move on too because he's up there in age and he's got a big salary. I'm not moving Jaden McDaniels, and I'm not moving Anthony Edwards. That's it. So I'd love to have KD here, but I'm not moving Jaden.
I've seen the Gobert, Dante, and Rob Dillingham for Kevin Durant. I've seen that, and to me that's palatable. But if this comes down to a contract and he wants a contract extension, and this kind of reminds me of the Vikings and their dalliance with Aaron Rodgers. If you've got this plan, don't veer off for one guy that could potentially set you back. If this is what you believe and this is going to alter, you know, completely what your team is, then is the juice worth the squeeze? I would say no.
The other bite of the night that I want to get to is from former ABC journalist Terry Moran. You guys know that what was a little bit over a week ago, he was ousted by ABC about the tweet that he had about Stephen Miller, his thoughts on Donald Trump. And this was him earlier on a podcast basically standing by what he says.
You don't sacrifice your citizenship as a journalist. And your job is not to be objective. There is no Mount Olympus of objectivity where a Mandarin class of wise people have no feelings about what their society. We're all in this together. What you have to be is fair and accurate. And I would refer to the interview with the president that I did or a lot of my work. And I would also say that this, while very hot, is an observation, a description that is accurate and true.
Yeah, and we got 10 years evidence.
We have to call things like we see them at times, okay? And I'm not saying that every single time you're going to be right on a hunt. No one's right a hunt. No one's batting 1,000. But I thought it was silly that they fired him, number one.
Oh, over that? Yeah.
But number two, I think that's where we're at with if Trump doesn't like a reporter. Mm-hmm. Like, he goes on the offensive and will attack them, and he wants to, you know, he wants to see blood from whatever organization that is.
Yeah, if you are not...
If the organization's not going to stand up for the employee, then that's the issue.
No, and there's so much intimidation coming from the administration about this is how you have to cover us. This is how you need to cover us in order to have access. So do you alter how you're presenting news to get that information? Or do you say, hey, we're going to stand by who we are and what we've done for years at, you know, at the risk of, you know, alienating and, you know, irritating this administration? You got to figure out, is the juice worth the squeeze? For ABC, they didn't want to disrupt that, so they figured it's kind of like CNN getting rid of Jim Acosta.
We don't live in Russia. This is not state media. ABC bended a knee, and they should not have. It's insane to me.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
And that's why the independent journalism is so important nowadays, because you can filter through what they call the legacy media and get to the stuff that's really happening. Whether or not you like it doesn't make it not true. I mean, we're just in this society where I don't like it, so I don't think it's true. Okay, you might not like it, but that doesn't mean that you can say this is not reality.
Speaking of independent journalists, he's a damn good one. Aaron Rupar from Public Notice Newsletter. He joins us next year on The Lake Show. Aaron Rupar joining us courtesy of the John Schuster-Coyle Banker Hotline. Aaron, earlier when I... First off, thank you for your flexibility tonight. I wanted to get the former Minneapolis Police Department chief on, and he joined us at 7:05. We had you at 7:05, so I appreciate you moving back 30 minutes, but it sounded like you had your hands full with the kids.
Yeah, you caught me outside with we were playing baseball, and we didn't have the exact baseball that my son, who is three, wanted, so that led to a tantrum, but he's happily downstairs with Mama, and I'm on with you, so it's all good.
Was he wearing Twins gear when you guys were playing, or what?
Yeah, he actually has a Twins shirt and a Twins hat, and you know, sometimes I wear my Twins hat around. He likes to match it up with Dada, so he's very cute, and he loves baseball, so it's a good deal for me. We go to a lot of games together.
Oh, so wait, how many games? That was going to be my next question. How many games have you been to Target Field with your son?
Probably at least about a half dozen this season.
Wow, that's awesome,
granted,
dude.
We don't end up watching all of the game. Like, we'll watch the first five innings, and then he likes to go to that right field area, you know, where they have, like, the kid zone.
Yep.
And we take a little wooden bat and a ball and play kind of pepper out there, which he absolutely loves. So, you know, he takes some swings, and fortunately he can't swing hard enough to hit the ball hard enough where it would hurt anybody or put them in danger, but he's getting pretty close. So we got to enjoy it while we can, because by next year we won't be able to play out there anymore.
Got you. All right. You know, it's been a very troubling weekend here in the state of Minnesota. This is our community. You know, this is our lives we're talking about, and beyond people that were assassinated, murdered, people that were shot, the manhunts traumatizing communities, just all over the state, right? Like, it happened here in the cities, and then they, you know, ended up in Greenough. I guess let's start with just your reaction to the news of the tragedy this weekend. Melissa Horbin and her husband were assassinated, and John Hoffman and his wife were shot numerous times, but they have survived.
Complete shock. I mean, I woke up on Saturday and, you know, my phone was kind of exploding with the news. Of course, I'm plugged in with a lot of DFL people, and so they knew, you know, before word went public that Melissa had tragically passed away. So I woke up to that news on Saturday, and, you know, I knew her a little bit. I actually interviewed her for my podcast coming up on 2 years ago now. And so I got to know her a little bit through that and kind of, you know, talked with her offline prepping for that and, you know, seemed like a genuinely, you know, really nice person. And of course, an extremely accomplished politician with a great backstory of, you know, kind of getting into politics later in life and losing an election and working way all the way up to become House Speaker. So, you know, obviously, I'm probably as aware as anyone of the rhetoric on the right and how overheated it can get and, you know, how Republicans can kind of train, you know, threats and harassment onto people. And still, even with all of that being said, I mean, you just never expect anything like that to happen. So, and then, of course, as you mentioned, you're kind of worrying, you know, for other people who were on the list that he had when he was on the loose, you know, if would he resurface at someone else's door? So obviously relief that, you know, that the gunman was apprehended last night. But shocking news, you know, terrible tragedy. And, you know, my heart goes out to the Hortman family, the Hoffman family, you know, and everybody who works in politics, who worked alongside them and cared for them.
The quick jump to conclusions by folks, that really bothered me, to be honest with you, Aaron. It really did. And, you know, at the top of the list would be Mike Lee from Utah. His tweets, in all honesty, made my blood boil. Like, that's just, this is unacceptable. These are not the type of people we want representing our country. Did you? I'm sure you probably saw his tweets and stuff that he put out there.
Oh, yeah. I was absolutely appalled. And, you know, Mike Lee actually blocked me on Twitter many years ago. So I wanted to reply. I mean, I was so worked up that I, you know, wanted to say something in his replies, and I can't because I'm blocked by him. But I mean, you're right that even in the context of an extremely shameless Republican Party that obviously has very little issue lying and gaslighting people, you know, first of all, to kind of make light of a tragic assassination like that and, you know, the heartache that people are feeling, and then you're kind of tossing these bombs of conspiracy theories into that mix. And, you know, not only that, but just kind of blatantly lying. I mean, this whole talking point that is it Boitler, is that his name is pronounced, but that the gunman, you know, that he's a Democrat. I mean, obviously, that's completely discredited. He voted for Trump. You know, obviously, the issues that he was passionate about being anti-abortion, you know, is a conservative position. So there was no evidence that there was any, you know, connection with Democrats beyond Walz putting him on some sort of, you know, putting him on a board, a bipartisan board that didn't really mean a whole lot. So, you know, it's completely shameful. And you would like to think that, you know, even in the Republican Party, there'd be no room for that. And I guess we'll see, because, you know, Utah is regarded as being, for a very red state, one that has an independent streak. Of course, you know, Mitt Romney was a senator there. There have been other candidates who haven't totally towed the MAGA line who have had success in Utah. So I guess we'll wait and see. But, you know, I'll never think of Mike Lee again without thinking of those tweets that he posted. And I really tip my cap to Senator Tina Smith, who I saw, you know, confronted him in the Senate this afternoon. And, you know, I don't know if you saw that, you might have already been on the air, but, you know, Smith's staff sent Lee's office a letter basically, you know, kind of denouncing and just, you know, asking him to reflect on if they can be proud of the work that he did over the weekend, that their office did, to really, you know, take an unspeakable tragedy and make people feel even worse about it.
Yeah. Mike Lee, what he did was, it was beyond appalling. It was unacceptable, and he is not somebody that I respect. I mean, quite frankly, you can't respect somebody that, in the midst of a tragedy, a national tragedy like this, would do what he is doing on social media. And yes, the gaslighting from people, I just find it all like kind of funny that people think they were all dumb. And I, you know me, I like to point things out on social media, specifically Twitter, where I'm just like, yeah. Wait, you think that we're all dumb? Because even his friend or the guy that was like a roommate where he rented a room out of the house or whatever, he had this to say to CBS News over the, yesterday.
Well, everyone's calling him a Democrat. He's not a Democrat. He would be offended if people called him a Democrat. So, but because of this board thing he was on for Governor Walz, it wasn't to serve. He was just serving the community.
All right. So he said in that soundbite, hopefully you heard at least it well enough, Aaron, but he said he wasn't a Democrat. He would be offended if he was called a Democrat. And with regards to this board that he was on for Governor Walz, like he was doing this for community. It wasn't like he knows Governor Walz or he was like, you know what I'm saying? He was doing it because he wanted to be a part of the process of it all.
Yeah, you know, I think the other thing that's kind of important to emphasize here is that Mike Lee is far from alone in spreading conspiracy theories. I mean, Donald Trump Jr., I posted a number of clips today. He was doing a round of interviews because the Trump family has rolled out a new Trump phone, which is kind of a funny topic in its own right because it's kind of the latest blatant grift that they're doing. But, you know, he was asked in all these interviews about the Minnesota situation. And, you know, his talking point was that, you know, leftists are even more violent than Republicans. And the evidence is this Minnesota shooter who was a leftist because Tim Walz couldn't possibly appoint anyone who isn't, you know, basically a Marxist. Kind of echoing some of the stuff that Mike Lee said. So, I mean, this is, you know, that brain rot goes pretty deep. And I don't think it's really like a lack of intelligence. You know, I think they know what they're doing. But I think it's almost like, you know, rubbing salt in the wound. You know, it's kind of it's like a form of aggression to say things like that, that, you know, I'm sure Donald Trump Jr. and Mike Lee know are false. But, you know, they're meant to make people feel bad. And, you know, sadly, I mean, you know, half of our politics right now, I think a lot of Republicans kind of get off on the suffering of others. And, you know, they just don't have that moral compass that I think we'd like to think people in public life do have. And, you know, I don't want to say if that's all Republicans. You know, certainly I saw some nice statements from Minnesota Republicans specifically, you know, paying tribute to Melissa Hortman and Hoffman. But yeah, I mean, I just think it's really kind of a sad state of affairs that that's where our politics is, where when something, you know, unspeakably tragic happens like this, we can't, you know, just kind of be decent humans. And, yeah. You know, I think that's, you know, that's a sign of the times.
I'm with you. Talking to Aaron Rupar from the Public Notice Newsletter here on The Lake Show, News Talk 830 WCCO. All right, I do want to get to a couple other matters while we got you. This weekend, the only thing that I did was I went to the Lynx game on Saturday, even though I was just there. I could not stop thinking about what had happened earlier. And that was the, and it still is the number one story here locally. It's one of the biggest stories in the world still. So I was there, but I wasn't there, right? I wasn't mentally at the Lynx game. I bring that up because other than that, I didn't do anything else over the course of the weekend, and I wasn't necessarily paying attention to any other real news stories. But we also had the Trump military parade. What assessment do you have from that? What were people's reactions to what took place on Saturday?
Yeah, I went into it almost feeling kind of uneasy because I think my expectation was that it was going to be, you know, like the Soviet Union in 1945 or like, you know, Pyongyang and North Korea, where you'd have the troops kind of goose-stepping and, you know, the powerful authoritarian kind of looking down from on high, you know, sort of saluting the troops. And it was anything but that. I mean, I made the joke on social media that it was basically kind of like the Spirit Halloween version of a fascist rally where, you know, you had the tanks rolling through the streets, so you could hear them kind of creaking because there was such a reaction from the crowd, which was extremely sparse. So I really, you know, I had kind of, I think, pretty normal expectations in the sense I thought it would project power and, you know, kind of really bolster Trump's strongman image. And I think it kind of made him look clownish. And, you know, in some ways, it kind of left me almost feeling bad for the country. You know, this is where we're at, where, you know, you have this kind of wannabe authoritarian leader who wants to have a parade on his birthday, even though, you know, he pretended that it was the, you know, for the army. And he can't even really pull that off right. And, you know, they had a very underwhelming crowd and it was very unenthusiastic. And even the, you know, the tanks and the planes and the troops, I mean, even that seemed pretty low energy. So, you know, I came out of it, like I said, you know, sort of shaking my head and sort of snickering, but also kind of feeling bad that, you know, this is where we're at right now.
All right. Final thing for you. Now we have, you know, Israel and Iran, they are at war. And last week, remember, Donald Trump, he made the comment. What did he say that he didn't authorize or he didn't, you know, basically like he said that he didn't authorize anything to happen here in terms of any strikes. What do we know about what he knew or didn't know?
You know, I haven't seen a lot of in-depth reporting on that. And, you know, even the administration itself has been contradictory, where you had Marco Rubio,
yep,
who basically said, we were not looped in. And then you had Trump a short time later last week saying, no, you know, they told us what they were doing ahead of time.
Yeah.
You know, now it seems like it's, yeah, which was, but now they're kind of hand in glove because, again, you were on the air, but Trump left the G7 in Canada early. He was supposed to stay overnight and then have more meetings tomorrow. And Fox News is reporting that he wants the, you know, his cabinet officials to be arrayed in the Situation Room when he returns to D.C. And there has been reporting, you know, that military planes are headed to the Middle East right now. And so, you know, I think there's worries that, you know, the war, the bombing of Iran is going to take, you know, even a kind of more serious turn tonight with possible American involvement in some capacity in this. And so, you know, it's hard not to think back to the campaign where, you know, one of Trump's big selling points is that he was going to keep us out of wars like this. So I guess we'll have to see what happens. I mean, Trump certainly loves bluffing, but it does seem like with, you know, military assets heading to the region, you know, like an escalation is around the corner here, which is, you know, really scary. It could be really destabilizing for the region and for the world, not to mention the humanitarian toll. So, you know, it certainly is my impression, to get back to your question, that that Israel is working kind of hand in glove with the Trump administration at this point. But like I said, the reporting I've seen has been kind of contradictory in terms of to what extent that goes. Is the U.S. just kind of blessing this, or is there active involvement? Some of the indications earlier tonight suggest that there is actually some active involvement, but it seems like tonight there's going to be a lot of news surrounding this.
Hey, real quick, Kevin Durant, yes or no? I'm anti-Kevin Durant because I'm not giving up Jaden McDaniels.
No, I'm with you on that. If we had to trade Jaden, I didn't want to do it. I was a little bit heartbroken, you know, with the reporting today that he doesn't want to be here. It made me feel kind of bad because I was kind of hoping he would want to be here, and then maybe we could put a package together that would have been like Julius, Rob, you know, some salary filler in our pick. But it seems like that's off the table now. And that probably, honestly, is dodging a bullet because at KD's age, and especially if you're going to pay him for two more years, it'd probably be nicer to find someone who's a little more synced up timeline-wise with Jaden and Ant. So it would have been fun. I certainly would have rushed out and bought a KD jersey and been excited to see him. But, you know, we'll see what Tim Connelly has up his sleeves going forward this summer. Hopefully it ends up being a good thing in the end that we miss out on KD.
I'll finally see you at Summer League, my man. We're going to watch Cooper Flagg.
Are you heading out there soon?
I'm going to text you. I already got, man, my flight's been booked. My hotel reservation's been booked, baby. I'm ready for the strip. And the Wolves lucked into getting the 17th overall pick. I'm ready.
Yeah, who knows if we'll actually be, you know, selecting with that pick or we'll be trading it. But yeah, sidebar with me offline. We'll talk about it.
All right, man. Great job as always. I appreciate your time. That's Aaron Rupar from the Public Notice Newsletter joining us here on The Lake Show. A couple of final minutes of hour two. We'll do headlines at the end of the show. We'll do Jeff Hayden at the top of the hour. All right, thanks again, Aaron Rupar, for being on the show. He's a sports fan too, man. Twins fan. Timberwolves fan. I know for a while when he was out in the D.C. area, he would attend Wizards games, but he's firmly a Wolves fan. I think he's got tickets. Good dude, man.
Good.
Really good dude.
Good. I mean, you never want to lose your Minnesota roots. No matter where you're at, you always got to root for the home team. It's always your home
That's
team.
When I was living in Kansas City. They couldn't tell me nothing about the Juicy Lucy. I'm like, look, y'all ain't going to disparage Juicy Lucy.
Yeah, exactly.
You guys are tripping.
They don't know nothing. They know nothing there. You have barbecue, but you don't know the Juicy Lucy.
Don't play with us, man.
Exactly.
I'm not disrespecting your barbecue. Don't disrespect our burgers. Please
yes.
Don't do that.
Same way in Houston. They're kolaches.
Coming up next, guests on this show all the time. Jeffrey Hayden, former Minnesota State Senator. His reaction to the tragic events over the weekend. He joins us next.